Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, I am.
Ring bandana, bandana,
tell me.
A revolution. Yeah. I'm on fire for revolution. A revolution, yeah. Rasta tight up my revolution, yeah. Dang, 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 dang.
Check it.
Some corporate people don't come out and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I'm enough to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feel the heat. Red country. Why it's red country. Why in the ghetto part of town you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to say let alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone. Why so a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon. A revolution, yeah. A hot revolution. Ring bang da da ding, bang da da ding. Heads of government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young your son, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't swell. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of suffering, son. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang, da, da, dang, dang, da, da, dang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but poor mongers, idol worshippers, them a sorcerers. Yo, you better come down off of your pumps and try to picking poor people for a joyride. Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tools, just fool. Sure, cause a revolution, yeah. The poor boy to steer the revolution. Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution. Ding da dang da dang da dang, dang. Whoa, whoa. No matter how them a come out and a kill off them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach, cause I don't want to see them all a pagan preach. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on sight of revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Chef Rob. I got an interesting show, I guess. Yeah, I think I do. I want to go over a little bit of some of this Claude Addison piece, trying to continue it from last night. But I got someone who's waiting eagerly to give his spiel. His thoughts, his views, how he feels. Brother Rob, you there?
Yes, I am, Brother Hotep.
Hotep, how you feeling?
Oh, man.
Did you get over it yet, man? Did you get over it yet?
I'm sorry?
Did you get over it yet? Because you was a little under the weather last time I saw you.
Oh, yeah, man. I feel much, much better compared to a month ago, brother. I thought I was going to leave here through very auspicious means, you know?
Yeah, I feel you, man. Hey, I want to go ahead and jump in and just play just a little bit of this Claude Anderson thing. I want you to chime in on that. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, let me get it going here, cause I didn't, things came around up here, man. I'm looking at some stuff, so you know, it's caught my attention a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me see where we at. Let me see.
82,000 dollars for every jail cell they build, and $27,000 a year to operate the prison for per prisoner. And just in all those black prisoners, you find just the black male prisoners for supplying them with shaving lotion, underarm deodorant, and soap. That is a $3 billion a year industry, and black people don't get a penny out of it. People are already making money off of our people in prison. And nobody even cares about where the money is going and how they're making the extra money, even after they criminalize you. Now, this criminalization process didn't start here, so let me get with the public policy and I'll show where everything started, and let's analyze it with history very quickly. The whole problem goes back to 1619. In 1619, there was no such thing. Y'all be clear on this. There was no such thing, basically, as racism. Racism didn't exist before black slavery started. You had conflict between ethnic groups. You had conflict between religious groups. And you had cultural disagreements. But you never had racism until black enslavement started. Racism is a word that means race. It means group. I don't want you to let people keep telling you that black people can be racist. You cannot be racist. The word does not exist for you. Racism means group-based. Racism means a power relationship, a power relationship between two groups, where one group owns and controls so much that they can use their wealth and their power to deprive and hurt and injure another group. That's what racism is. And no place can you find a black person on earth that could be a racist. Only thing you can get at best is a black reactionary. That means a black person who's reacting to white racism. And I want people to quit calling Farrakhan a racist. Farrakhan is not a racist. What Farrakhan is doing is reacting to white racism. If black folk had been racist, they'd have been racist 400 years ago. They would have stopped people from depriving and hurting and castrating and lynching and exploiting them 400 years ago. That's why if you go back through history, you cannot find one single solitary instance any place in history on this earth where black folk have had enough power and wealth to come together to do injury to another group and take something from them. In the United States, you've never seen any blacks come together as an organization, as a group, to hurt any other group. Blacks have never done anything to Jews or to whites or anybody else, Asians or Hispanics, as a group. We can't practice racism. We don't even have a community to practice racism. But on the other hand, I can go through history books and I can show you mountains, thousands, maybe millions of instances where everybody else have done things mean to us, to deprive and hurt us, by social customs, by extra legal and legal means, by laws to do in black folks. You can't be a racist unless you got power and wealth for your group to be able to hurt other people and take and do them in, and we don't have it. So all we are reactions to white racism. And so in 1619, they started bringing blacks into this country. They brought blacks in this country for the very specific reason, initially as indentured servants. They were sold off a Dutch ship for water and supplies. Blacks did reasonably well in the United States between 1619 and 1920, about 1924, 1925, in that general time frame. They served out their indentureship. Between 1626 and 1638, they began to intermingle with whites. Some of them intermarried and interbred. In 1638, the founding stone for racism in America was laid. The state of Maryland. The state of Maryland put out the first public edict that started racism for blacks in America. They put out an edict, a public policy that's called the Doctrine of Exclusion. The Doctrine of Exclusion says that black people should never be permitted to enjoy the fruits of white society. That became the doctrine of racism in America in 1638. Now, that was called the Doctrine of Exclusion. That meant every time you get a chance, exclude black folk out of it. I don't care what it is, exclude them out. What is out of, nowadays, out of welfare, food, whatever it is, exclude them out. Business, anything you can do. Now, that went on from 1638 to 1666, 1665 and more specifically. In 1665, something happened. Because during that period, they were trying to find a way to build the United States. And the European colonial powers were saying, I sent you whites to America to build America, to use the land to bring resources, to find gold and silver and products back to Europe. And the colonial powers, contrary to what you read in the history book, they did not come here for religious freedom. They weren't fools. They could have gone any place in Europe and worshiped. There was nothing over there but woods and bushes and trees over there. They came here specifically to get wealth and resources and gold. And what they kept telling the European colonial powers was that we can't do anything with America because we don't have a labor force. And somebody said, yes, we do have a labor force. See, remember that group back in 1638 that Maryland shut out under the Doctrine of Exclusion? That's our labor force. So at that point in time, what they did then, they passed what were called enslavement laws. They passed enslavement laws, and they took the Doctrine of Exclusion and expanded it. So that not only did the Doctrine of blacks to be excluded, but now blacks were to be excluded, subordinated, non-compensated, non-competitive work group, a labor force for the personal comfort and wealth building of white society. That was what the slave code said explicitly and implicitly. That's been the problem that you've had now for 400 years. It decided how you were to be treated. That slave, those slave codes again. And remember this, on anything that goes on in Los Angeles, you can tell when your policy is effective. Blacks would be excluded, subordinated, non-compensated, non-competitive, managed workforce for the personal comfort and wealth building of white society. That stayed in effect until about 1705. 1705, the slave codes were passed. Very important. What the slave codes did was to tell everybody, whites on one side and blacks on one side, how you were to treat black folks and how whites were to behave towards each other. It says that every white person must accept how black folk were to be treated. They must accept the public policy. And that every white institution, every white church, every white business, every white school, every white level of government, and every white individual must treat black folk in an extorted, subordinated, excluded manner. Any white person deviated from that, he could be hurt, injured, and lynched.
Hey, brother.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was going to go ahead and play a lot more of it. I'm going to go ahead and give people a break because I don't want their heads to explode.
Well, I'll be honest, brother, a little more than a year ago, I was given the book Powernomics by a close friend of mine, a young brother, who was coming out to my forums back in the late 80s and the early 90s. He was like 17 years old, and he brought his mother to the forum, okay? That's very rare. I have a lot of respect for this young brother. I sent him an email, so I'm sure he's out there listening today.
That's good.
But let me say this about Claude Anderson. or anybody else who's on the path to black people basically practicing the innate, that which we were born with, the innate ability to practice self-determination. That is to, in fact, create the environment in which you sow the seeds of happiness. That should be innate in everybody that's born on this planet and the country that you're born in. And for anybody to come and disrupt that, to me, points to a lack of civility or humanity on the part of the people who did that. So while I haven't read the book, I have the book along with, I think there's another book, smaller one that he sent me. I'm very much aware of Claude Anderson and the things that he's attempting to do. And I recall back in the, I think the early parts of the 2000s, he began his movement towards that in Michigan, in Detroit specifically. And I had been going to Detroit since the late 90s and built up a pretty good rapport with many of the people that I met there. As a matter of fact, I almost moved there. The level of blackness was so prevalent. That's all I require. We can deal with everything else, the incorrect behavior and those kind of things. But I noticed even back then that Detroit had a severe infection called electoral politics. And I tried to tell them back then, based on the research, and I must stress this, based on the research, that electoral politics for all practical purposes was going to become obsolete in the future. And therefore, we need to be about the business ASAP, as soon as possible, yesterday, mobilizing our energy around economic self-determination, because we saw clearly that with the laws that were being passed in the 80s and the 90s, black people were going to be obligated to the realm of obsolescence. We are not needed anymore. And that's where we find ourselves today, brother, such that the prison industrial complex has become a vast money-making organ where the entire school system and many other facets of society feed right into that dynamic. So I agree with everything that the brother said. My research jives with his. I don't know where his research is today in terms of what we are going to do to get ourselves out of here, but my prescription is the same as it has been, because as we study the landscape in terms of the movements of a white supremacist system globally, we make our analysis and our moves based on the research that we see coming down the pike. And as such, economic self-determination on the parts of many of our people is the only avenue left to black people who have been deemed obsolescent. We even called ourselves, brother, and we warned people about this. When we called ourselves minority set-asides based on the mindset of the Negro elite, it's like African Americans. When we bought into this term, minority set aside, what we really were saying was that in the future we would be deemed minorities who have been set aside. And that's exactly what has happened. So, yeah, brother, I agree with the brother wholeheartedly.
You know, real quick, I want to ask you something, because you touched on it, and I think it's kind of being pushed under the sheet, so to speak, pushed under the rug. You said there's a lot of unity in Detroit.
No, what I'm saying was the level of blackness.
Okay.
Here's what I mean.
Okay.
You'd be hard-pressed to go anywhere in this country and find large numbers of black people with Afrocentric names.
Okay.
Go to Detroit. You'd be hard pressed to find Joe and John. So, and what
yeah,
that
been
says
up,
is the seed has been.
I've been up there before.
Know.
I just didn't go ahead and pay attention to that at that time. But you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So what that says is the seeds of blackness were planted, but but the soil hasn't been tilled properly such that the growth has been stagnant, if not dangerous. Because our people, since 1968, have been pushed into the backwards world, the lying, thieving, non-productive world of electoral politics that only serves the purpose of the talented tenth. They're the people who get the contracts and who benefit from the electoral politics. They serve in many capacities to push white supremacy. You will see them or hear them on your neighborhood radio. You'll see them on your neighborhood TV and this kind of thing, where the average black person hasn't got anything but dissed from electoral politics.
So the whole thing with Kwame Kilpatrick up there, he was out for self, or was he trying to do something?
Let me put it like this, brother. I did a lecture on what was going on in Detroit, and we called it Strawberry Letter 22, based on the assassination of a sister who was one of the strippers in the mansion with Kwame Kilpatrick, as well as the attorney general, white boy, who they didn't go after. They let him go because that's the nature of white supremacy. But that sister was shot in the head several times sitting outside. You had police there who wanted to testify about what happened, and they had to lock themselves in their own home, scared to come out because they figured they would be assassinated. These are police in Detroit. So as far as I'm concerned, brother, we are right here in Chicago. How many black politicians have gone to jail attempting to play the game of electoral politics?
It's an interesting breed here in Chicago, man.
Brother, you'll find that same system all over the country where black politicians go to jail for little and nothing trying to play the game of electoral politics that is the citadel of white supremacy, and anybody in it, particularly at the national level, is going to push white supremacist doctrine, which is anathema, the exact opposite of black self-determination. Now, people can read into that what they will, but the facts speak for themselves. Detroit has now been labeled a war zone. Kwame Kilpatrick is on his way back to prison. Okay? We have several here on their way to prison. In New Jersey, you got them on their way to prison. Wherever you look, brother, you find a number of black politicians, you'll find a significant number of them on their way to prison. Those are the facts. And normally, brother, I don't speak off the cuff. I'm doing that tonight because I'm not at home. So I would give people the documentation where they could go and pull these things up in themselves, because that's just how I operate. I don't like to talk, even though I can talk with the best of them. I like to let my research speak for me.
Well, so, go off your prior research.
I'm sorry?
Go off your prior research.
Yeah, well, the only problem is I tend to quote it quite a bit, but I'm not going to worry about it. All they got to do is Google some of the terms we're going to talk about here tonight, and they'll find that this is accurate. For instance, we look at the situation that's going on today, and this is the heart of economics, and we have to ask ourselves, what in the hell is happening, and where is the economic system heading? I think everybody wants to know that. There's a huge amount of uncertainty in terms of what's going to be happening with the economy tomorrow. Let me go forward, and then we can go backwards if you like.
Go ahead.
What we see happening now is the result of over $700 trillion. Listen to what I said. That's trillion with a TR. $700 trillion in phony paper called derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
The Federal Reserve, through what they call QE3, is not only putting money into the system to keep it afloat. This is globally, because when the Federal Reserve does something here, it not only affects the rest of the central banks around the planet, but it also lends money through the IMF to those very same central banks. But the Federal Reserve, because that 700 plus, and some say it's a quadrillion now with interest. Now, I just want people to kind of run that number by in their mind. There's so many zeros, you can't see them all on a sheet of paper. That's the level. That's the amount of money that's lost out there based on phony paperwork that was put out here by the major banks, not just in this country, even though they had a large part of it, but they have a European they have European satellites. In other words, they have European banks who are doing the same things there that they're doing here in terms of the phony mortgages, where they would break these mortgages up and repackage them and sell them as something else, okay? But that $700 trillion is why people's 401ks and retirement funds, okay, were growing astronomically. So now, what does the Federal Reserve do? The Federal Reserve, as we speak covertly, is buying or spending $40 billion a month trying to buy up those derivatives, because if they don't, the retirement funds that are due people, in many cases on a monthly basis, would not be there to pay them. So look at it this way. Not only did these criminals, led by Goldman Sachs, which is a Rothschild banking system, okay, and J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, Wells Fargo, all these are four of the five major banks. These banks basically have to have a certain amount of liquidity on hand according to the new regulations that came out, because they have to continue to pay out the retirements of people who already have had their money stolen. Okay? This is why every major city in the country has problems with their retirement, the pension funds, because the pension funds were wrapped in those derivatives. You follow me?
I got you.
And the only way they can pay those people their money is if they got to have liquidity on hand. That's why the Federal Reserve is buying up or spending $40 billion a month to buy up or to show up those banks to pay out those funds. And that still doesn't mean that the major cities are not going to have economic problems, because they have gutted the economic infrastructure based on outsourcing, that's moving corporations out of this country to other countries where they're being financed by the federal government to do so through organizations like the Agency for International Development, which is a CIA front company, because the CIA is the corporate police, and the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, that's called OPIC. You can Google OPIC, subsidizes plants moving to other countries, and you can Google Agency for International Development, but be aware that when you Google these two institutions, you can bet that the government is trying to see what is it that you're looking for, okay? Now, let's go back a little bit more. Let's go back to 1988 or 92 with the advent of Bill Clinton. With Bill Clinton came something called NAFTA. the North American Free Trade and Finance, which is extremely important, and Finance Agreement. We all know it as NAFTA. Corresponding with NAFTA on a global level with other financial institutions that basically had different names but served in exactly the same capacity, where we saw the European Union coming together under one currency of almost all of the European countries, which is the same thing that NAFTA was supposed to do, because NAFTA brings into play the formation of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, with the subsequent addition of other Latin American countries with other presidents as they came along. And we see that now with Barack Obama, and we saw it with Bush, where free trade is being used as the cover to bring about conglomeration of world economic resources called world government. That's the one world government apparatus. You still with me?
Well, yeah.
So we saw that happening. But let's go back to one of the most heinous, evil politicians that ever crawled up out of the cave. I'm talking about Ronald Wilson Reagan. What Reagan did was start the whole thing by basically making government, or giving the impression that government was the enemy of free enterprise. And so what began to happen under Reagan was a dissolution of all the checks and balances that basically kept certain economic forces in their lane, so to speak. At the same time that that was going on, 10 years prior to Reagan, we began to see the dissolving of the educational system, because all that I just told you was already plans in the work going back many, many years. And so what they did was they deindustrialized the country. Therefore, you had to change the educational system to mirror the kind of system that you were going to have in the future. So all of the trades and things like that, carpentry, automotives, bookkeeping and accounting, all of those things that were in the educational system became privatized in the 70s, okay? So that you had to go to trade school now to get what you used to get free in high school, knowing that those trades were eventually going to be basically a lost cause, because the entire country was being deindustrialized. It was being changed over to fit the new economy, which began under Reagan and was called the service economy. Low wages, no benefits, don't complain, you're lucky you got anything. Everything else, brother, is an addendum to that in terms of economics. But that's a miniature version of what went on from the 1970s all the way up to today. We started backwards so people can see it right now. Privatization is a major component of that. All government is becoming an economic institution. So all over the country, we see government services now being bought by corporations and becoming privatized. We see roads all over the country by being bought up by private corporations, highways that your tax dollars and my tax dollars pay for, being privatized. And toll roads being put in their places. We see.
You know what, brother? Let me share with you something real quick. I've been to Acapulco a few times, right? And I went to like one of the little towns on the way to Acapulco. And there's a lot of toll roads, too.
Yes, sir.
Going into Mexico, man. And mm-hmm. I was joking, asking, you know, hey, you know, because I'm over this side. I was thinking that the government owns all the toll roads. Over there, I asked who owned the toll roads over there. This guy said, oh, it's a Chinese guy who owns all of this on this highway, another Chinese guy in the crew. I was like, really? Man, that messed my head up, man. They own the toll roads.
Yes, sir. But you can see it happening. And, by the way, brother, China was given eminent domain status by the Barack Obama administration.
For where? All of U.S.?
The entire country, because China holds so much U.S. debt.
Hold on, let me wake my ass up now. Damn.
Brother, again, people can Google it. Just Google that term. It'll come up. But if you don't do the research, a lot of times you'll find yourself way behind thinking that you're doing the right thing when you're basically cutting your own throat supporting this insanity. What we're in the middle of, brother, and what I'm trying to lay out for you and the listeners, is we coined this phrase back in the 80s. If you really look at this thing, what we have going on currently is a global hostile corporate takeover.
Mm.
That's what's happening. So your school systems are going to be owned by the same corporations that own your roads and your parks and your water. And the government, I'm just going to say, a government in the near future will be the domain of the billionaires who set up foundations to put their money in these foundations to basically dictate social policy. That's the Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates and the Gates Foundation and Warren Buffett and, of course, Rockefeller Foundation. And many, many, many more. They will dictate policy based on your adherence to so-called, we call them community organizations. Outside this country, they exist at the United Nations level. They're called NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that are financed by the foundation structure to, in fact, implement public policy, social movement, okay? We know it here by so-called community organizations who are plugged into the system and are consistently financed through the foundation structure to push social policy. Now perhaps some of your listeners can understand why economic self-determination is the only option for us at this point, because those roads I talked about, brother, you'll be able to, with the privatization of the roadways, you won't even be able to be allowed in certain areas based on information that'll be in your car that's chipped. You'll have access, if you drive, to those information, to those roads, based on the information that's in your chip.
Wait, hold on. Let me share with you with something that I already seen.
yes, sir.
Prototypes of, okay? All right.
Yes, sir.
I live in California, right? And they were having it out there where at that time they were talking about the driving pool lane, whatever the hell it is, you know.
Yeah, carpool.
The carpool shit. Okay.
Yeah,
I never done it, so I no disrespect, but you know, I never done it. So they were trying to have the outer lanes equipped with these little monitors and sensors into the ground.
Right.
And they were testing it, and they had certain cars, and it was working pretty good. They had a few bumps, but it was working pretty good. Them chips have been in the cars for a long time because they were already saying that, hey, look, it didn't take much you don't have to go ahead and put nothing else in it. You just got to activate the computer that's already in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So the chip's already in the car. It's been in the car for a long time, ever since they started going here and computerizing your engine.
Yes, sir. And as you stated, I believe I just heard you say, that they're also putting the sensors in the ground.
In the ground. Yeah, they put it in the ground. They put them in the ground, man. That's why you gotta look at some of this construction work. Like, what the fuck? And you got a new thing from the ground. Like, what the hell is that for?
Hey, brother, I'm going to say it again. We talked about this stuff back in the 80s. We told people what that's called is spatial deconcentration, urban control districts.
Mm.
Many black people in the future who are being removed from the cities, that's part of a system when you see it going on in every major city. They'll be pushed. We're being pushed to the outskirts of the city. And again, your allowance in certain areas in these cities in the future will basically be determined by what information is basically compiled in your database. You heard of the no-fly zone?
Right, right.
You heard of the system that they have in place called no-fly, where if your name is on this list, you can't get on the airplanes and fly anywhere.
Right.
The same system is going to be put in place at the ground level, such that wherever you go, you will be tracked. And if you find yourself in an area where you have been deemed persona non grata, you will be arrested and prosecuted for trespassing.
Hey, brother, hold on. Let me play a little bit more of this Claude Anderson piece, because a lot of stuff you said, I think, is coming up in this next little part.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Included, subordinated, non-compensated, non-competitive work group, a labor force, for the personal comfort and wealth building of white society. That was what the slave code said explicitly and implicitly. That's been the problem that you've had now for 400 years. It decided how you were to be treated. That slave, those slave codes again. And remember this, on anything that goes on in Los Angeles, you can tell when your policy is in effect. The blacks will be excluded, subordinated, non-compensated, non-competitive, managed workforce for the personal comfort and wealth building of white society. That stayed in effect until about 1705. 1705, the slave codes were passed. Very important. What the slave codes did was to tell everybody, whites on one side and blacks on one side, how you were to treat black folks and how whites were to behave towards each other. It says that every white person must accept how black folk were to be treated. They must accept the public policy. And that every white institution, every white church, every white business, every white school, every white level of government, and every white individual must treat black folk in an exploited, subordinated, excluded manner. Any white person deviated from that, he could be hurt, injured, and lynched. Even whites could not deviate from that policy. And black, you could not, no white person could raise a black person up to make him equal to a white person. And on the other side of the slave code, it told how blacks were to be treated. Blacks were not to be permitted to be equated to whites in any respect. A white person could not enter a room without a white person's permission. A black person could not enter a group, carry on a conversation without permission. He could not carry a weapon, a tool. He could not raise his hand to defend himself. He could not strike a white person. He could not be called out after dark on certain times, carrying a weapon. And he could even look out, in some cases, he could even look out the same window the whites looked out of. That was a subordination. He could never be put in a position of power and authority. Now, those are what the slave codes did. And also the slave codes put out, they put attached to that was called the Diversity Act of 1705. It says to make sure this thing works. Every time you get six black folks together, make sure there's one white person included. That was to always monitor black folks to make sure they never did any planning. But he never did anything that could be injurious to them. So by 1710, things really started picking up all over the world. Six out of every seven persons coming across the Atlantic were black folks coming to America. Six out of seven were black for the first 300 years coming this way west were black. Just in between, show you what they were doing, just in from 1500 to 1660 as an example. They shipped 5 million black folk out of Africa just to Central America down here to dig for gold and silver. And in 150 years, black folk with tools and sticks and stones, they dug out over 16,000 tons of silver and over 4,000 tons of gold. All that went back to Europe. Black folk at that point in time was producing almost 99% of all the sugar on earth, cotton, tobacco, anything else. They were building all the houses, the caulkers, builders. So what they did then is sort of advertising in Europe. So anybody wants to get wealth, they go to America. You go to America, we guarantee you. We give you free land and free labor. And you would have to be an idiot to come to America to give you free land and free labor and not get rich. So they began, and by 1710, somebody said, well, how are we going to control all these blacks? So they passed, so the state of Virginia passed a law called Meritorious Manumission. Meritorious Manumission then says that we will control blacks by building in an internal attitude inside of them to make them see things through our eyes, to make them white in everything but skin color. And what the Meritorious Manumission passed by the state of Virginia in 1710 then said we were, and said we will reward any black who gets very good at this. And so if any black person saves a white person's life, protects a white person's property, invents something that a white person can make money off of, or if he squeals on in the slave revolt, he would get freedom. Okay? And so I tracked from 1710, all the way up to 1860. And out of possible, over 200 some possible slave revolts, a black person squealed in every one of them. And so by following that up, so in 1712, there's a guy down named Willie Lynch, 2 years later down in down in Jamaica. He heard about the law. He came up to Virginia and said, I know how to do it. I can help you set up a system where black folk will never, ever organize and come together again. He says, I got a lot of experience in the islands on treating blacks. And so that's what y'all heard about the Willie Lynch letter. That's where that came. So Willie Lynch came up 2 years later, and they paid Willie Lynch to be a consultant to carry out what was enacted in Virginia in 1710. He says, I would divide blacks along lines of sex, along lines of skin color, along lines of age, tribe, everything. He said, and that way they'd never get organized again. They would never, ever have a community. I would divide them so they'd never have a community that would be functional. And Willie Lynch started that, and as Willie Lynch started that, blacks began to squeal on each other. 100 years later, by 1840, for instance, I had over 6,000 blacks in the United States that were slave owners. 6,000 blacks owned other slaves by 1840. Because as soon as they got free on the Meritorious Manumission, they ran out and tried to be white and hired and bought them some black slaves. And then when you saw tears come out of my eyes, I just thought about, again, I was thinking about down in New Orleans. Down in New Orleans, and blacks down there saying, Dr. Evans, what can bring us together? And I said, you got a big problem. They said, why? And that's why I had the tears. Let me tell you something. In New Orleans was the epitome of black folk doing in other black folk. On the eve of the Civil War in New Orleans, you had almost approximately 812 free blacks in New Orleans on the eve of the Civil War. 642 owned other black slaves. Then in the Civil War, New Orleans put together two full regiments of blacks to fight with the South to keep slavery. And worse than that, one of the biggest revolts, slave revolts, occurred in New Orleans, where blacks tried to break free. And did you know that the free blacks joined the white plantation owners and went and put down the black slave revolt? And the worst part about it, they chopped off all the heads of all the blacks that were revolting and put them on poles leading all the way from Jefferson Parish all the way into the city of New Orleans as a warning against any other blacks trying to get free of the system. And see, that hurts me when I hear about that. And so, you see, you got that Meritorious Manumission policy saying keep black folk divided. So between 1712 now and up until the Civil War, some things sort of happened that's very profound for you all in understanding your racial situation out here. By 1750, black folk peaked out. The population of blacks in America got up to 34%. And then the white society got very scared with that. They said, with that kind of number in this country, there's a possibility that blacks might get together with Indians. So then in every treaty that Indians and whites were signing with Indian treaties, they put an incentive in there for the Indians to turn against black folks. They say, every time you catch a black, you're going to turn him in. And they would pay an Indian $20 on average to chase down an escaped runaway slave, to track him in the woods and bring him back to his plantation. And because of that, Indians in America allied with the white dominant society. And I keep hearing blacks bragging about the fact how much Indian blood they got. Indians were not your friends in history. They were not your friends. And I don't mean to put the Indians down. Indians got special problems. I'm not putting anybody else down. I'm not going to put the Hispanics down. I'm going to tell you the truth. And out of the five civilized tribes, out of the five civilized tribes in the United States, all five of them sided with the South to keep slavery. In a 20-year period between 1840 and 1860, the biggest killers of blacks in America were Indians. And
see,
the Indians then, so that's what they
were
trying to get that kind of an ally between the
whites. You there, brother?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, where do you start with what you just heard?
Well, brother, again, I can't disagree with anything he said because I've done the research. So I know what he's saying to be accurate. And while I haven't done the research in terms of perhaps not as extensively in that area as he has for his purposes, you be hard-pressed to bring anybody before this brother that you're talking to today that haven't done the research. I've been researching for 30 years. So you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody to bring before me in any area that I haven't had some intimate look at, because we need to be well-versed in as many areas as possible to deal with this beast that we're dealing with today. And everything that he just said is still going on today. The only problem is recognizing it, being able to recognize that that same system is in place. And if I might add, brother, you're talking to one of the brothers who introduced Willie Lynch back in the 80s. Nobody knew nothing about no Willie Lynch. This is way before Farrakhan took it to Million Man March and all that kind of stuff. We made up copies of the thing right in here in Chicago. And the stuff went out all over the place. So, you know, we've been at the forefront of a lot of things. But my thing has been this, brother. Personalities is part of a psychological construct being used to get our people to focus on foolishness as opposed to focusing on the real issues. And I don't care who the personality is.
Oh, you got to repeat that. Because some people didn't get it.
Personalities, be they athletic, be they entertainers, hip-hop artists, R&B, whatever, and in the social areas, Al Sharpton, all these people, they are personalities put out here geared to keep you looking left when you need to be looking right. And that is why I shun personality and won't allow anybody to put me into that construct. I do not allow it, period. I'm a regular black man, no better, no worse than anybody else. Because we need to learn how to work together based on common interests and not that somebody knows something more than the other. Or this Zionist Jewish construct has placed before us a television which says, mimic what you see on it. Or that same Zionist Jewish construct introduced to us something called enter the net, where now we've got personalities being formulated from entering the net. So that personality, these personalities, are sold to you like Democrat and Republican Party. There's no difference. The difference between Democrats and Republicans is the difference between Coke and Pepsi. It's the same product. They only have different packaging because they are produced by the same people. So which one would you rather have, brother, Coke or Pepsi?
I really don't like them.
So...
I avoid them with a passion. When I see it, like, give me that.
But the problem is multifaceted, brother. It's not just economic. It's spiritual as well. For this past year, I haven't dealt with politics to any degree. for this entire year. This entire year I've been studying the origins of African spirituality, and it's just blown my mind. So I begun to say this wherever I go. Black people are the most powerful people to ever escape the clutches of white supremacy in the history of the planet. You know, many people who tried to fight white supremacy ain't here today.
Yeah.
They annihilated. We managed to survive.
Right.
That's based on our ingenuity and our history, okay? But I must add this as well. Understanding our history from a spiritual perspective, we are the most ignorant people on the face of the planet. Because we've taken everybody's historical narrative and adopted it as our own.
If you look
at their narrative, their narrative is nothing more than a piece of ancient African or Kemetan history.
Hold on. Wait. I want to play this next part from Dr. Anderson, and he was talking about some of that in that. Okay?
Yes, sir.
And Indians, but blacks do not ally with them. That's why every civilized tribe was a slave trader. Indian tribe was a slave trader and a slave owner. As a matter of fact, in Camp Smith, right not too far from me in Texas, in 1867, in Camp Smith, the Choctaws and the Chickasaws still had slaves even 2 years after the war and wouldn't turn them loose. And the United States government gave them $300,000 to turn black slaves loose, the Chickasaw and Choctaw Indians, and said, we'll give you $300,000. Take this money and divide it up and turn those black slaves loose and give them some land. And they never, but 2 years later in 1869, blacks were coming to Washington saying the Indians never gave them anything. And to this day, blacks never got anything. What I'm saying is everybody has been against blacks because we've never been united. But so when I leave you this after today, I want you all to be together. Okay? And so by 1750, we hit 34 population. That scared, that was the colonies were scared. So they started petitioning England to quit shipping any more slaves in. And that's what triggered the Revolutionary War. And one of the biggest things was that they were scared that blacks and Indians might somehow get together and take over the country. And so when after the war was over, let me get before that. Then the Constitution was written. When the Constitution was written, what they did, they went back and picked up slave codes. I told you about the slave codes and enslavement laws. That's why in the United States Constitution they classify you as 3/5 of a human being, why they passed the Fugitive Slave Act, and why they condone, okay, slavery. That's why you got locked into that whole system. Because what they did then was give all the power to the slaveholding states in the South. And the first compromise was committed at that time. And what happened then, the wealthy whites in the country said, we will allow people to keep slaves, but we'll always protect poor whites. And so they started a system saying, wealthy whites up here, poor whites here, blacks down there. So even if you're a wealthy white, you'll make sure that poor whites are at least the management class, that they're over the blacks, they're the supervisors. So the blacks go into the ditch, the white would stand over it, the poor white would be over the ditch. If you put a black person on the truck, the white would drive the truck. Okay? That was a commitment that was made that poor whites would always come at least right above blacks. And I'm going to show you how that got into all our national public policies later on. And so between that, so by building to the Constitution. Now, to develop a system in this country, after the Constitution was initiated, they built the Constitution based on the premise that you're going to have a social democracy, very important for black folk. A social democracy means that the majority will win, the minority will lose and suffer. But also in the Federalist Papers, it says that the majority then can never do anything to stop the minority from becoming a majority. And it is the majority's responsibility to protect the minority. And as soon as the Constitution was built on that, it was violated next year, 1 year later. Whites in America never accepted that it was their responsibility to protect black folks if you're going to make them a minority. They're talking about black. See, black folks shouldn't be out now chasing civil rights. As a minority, they know that as a minority, you can't win. You don't have the power. It is the majority's responsibility to take care of the minority, not the minority's responsibility to fight for something you can't get. You don't have the power. And that was violated because in 1790, the first act of the Congress, right after the country was organized, the Constitution, the first law says this is a white country and the quota on black folk is zero, which means you got a zero quota and you can only come into this country as a slave. At that moment, black people became the only permanently planned minority in the country. You become the only planned loser. Remember, the minority means loser. Anytime you use the word minority, you call yourself a loser. Don't ever use that word. Okay? You call yourself a loser. So the first act of Congress was to pass an act saying it's a white nation, got a zero quota on blacks except for slaves. Nobody else you see in that minority category is there a law on you. Nobody says how many women you can have, how many gays you can have, how many handicapped, how many veterans you can have. Only blacks. That's why you cannot get Haitians into the country, because you got a zero quota. That quota was changed in 1966 and raised to 0.5% and 1%. Well, you got a few can drift in from the Caribbean, but they know you can't compete because you got 2 million Hispanics coming in every year. And that's why you can get suffocated to death. As a matter of fact, jumping ahead of myself for a second to show what I mean about the influx and how they're going to suffocate you. In 1840s, you did not have one single Asian or Hispanic in the entire United States. But you had 5 million black folk that were enslaved. 5 million black folk were enslaved, but you did not have one Asian and one Hispanic. By the Civil War, you had 6,000 Hispanics. By 1900, you had 100,000 Hispanics. You had 100,000 Hispanics in 1900, but you got 11 million blacks. They got the same identical birth rate. Here are blacks, here are Hispanics. Here are blacks, here are Hispanics. They got the same birth rate. Now they're going to pass blacks. You know why? You can't come into the country and fight and protect yourself by numbers. You are a permanent loser. And that's why you're going to be overwhelmed in this area. You cannot win. They can't let you get your population up. And the major issue they're going to fight for is keeping the doors of immigration open so they can become the dominant population over you. They know you cannot bring in your people. And that's why you had 3,000 blacks on a boat off the Cape coast to the west coast of Liberia, Africa, for about 2.5 months, and nobody would call them in. They were sick and hungry. No country would take them in. The United States has never had an immigration policy for black folks to bring in blacks, because they want you to stay in a minority category and loser category. And so what we're going to be talking about, we talk about solutions in a little while, is that the only way you win is that you got to learn that when you accidentally become the majority, you immediately start acting like the majority. Get out of the minority category. Don't ever let anybody call you a minority. If they're going to call you anything, make them call you the only non-immigrants in America. Okay? Every public policy that you develop, every program that you develop it for non-immigrants. When you develop it for non-immigrants, you get into a special category with just black folk. You immediately, that word non-immigrant reconnects you with your history. It reconnects you with how you got here. It reconnects you with your culture and your past. Right now you have no past and no culture, no future. And another thing that does when you start using the word non-immigrant is that you jump ahead of all the other groups. As immigrant takes on a negative, you say, hey, I'm not an immigrant. I'm a non-immigrant. And what you also do, you stop whites from bragging about my daddy came from Poland, my daddy came from Germany. You stop them from doing that by saying, hey, you're an immigrant then. I was here before you. See, 97% of all the black people in the United States were here before 97% of all other people here are even arrived today. Remember that. Very important. When somebody starts telling you to go back where you came from, you say, hey, 97% of my people are here before y'all ever arrived. And so if anybody's going to leave, the last leave first. And the people who developed everything should stay here, because everybody else got a free ride. So let me tell you what happened between 1710 and 1712 and the Civil War. Let me show you what blacks did in terms of accumulating the wealth. Nobody else accumulated the wealth. The wealth was in black slaves. They keep flipping things over, tricking my people, for making you believe that somebody worked hard and that they got their money from land. They did not get their money from land. Land had no value. Land had absolutely no value. You can get all the free land you wanted in America. They had head rights and land grants, gave out millions of acres of land whoever wanted. You could go in the United States and go out to the what we call the frontier, where Indians were, and say, I own from here to that mountain, drive a stick in the ground, go out and file a claim. Land had, all the time, land had value when you put a slave on it. And according to President Andrew Johnson, and Jackson rather, he says that immediately a black slave would bring 75% of the value to the land. So between the time of enslavement and the Civil War, whites in America invested $8 billion into buying slaves. And when they talked about freeing the slaves, they demanded their money back. And they asked for a reparation. They sent a letter to Lincoln saying, we'll turn the black slaves loose. You give us back our $8 billion. President Lincoln, you all don't know it, he sent a letter to Congress asking for $8 billion in reparations. Congress said, you know, that kind of money doesn't even exist. That's more money than all of our businesses and the federal budget put together. And that's one of the triggering mechanisms for the Civil War. They didn't have that kind of money. As a matter of fact, from the period I just told you about from 1710 to the Civil War, two out of every three people in the United States that had over $100,000, two out of every three lived in the South. A white plantation owner in the South who had black slaves had 400 times the wealth of a northern slummer. A white person in the South with two slaves had a value equal to any non-farmer in the North. If I take the white person in the North and add his house, his land, his animal, his tools, and his savings together, if you own two black slaves in the South, you had as much as a white person in the North. In the South, up until the Civil War, a black slave was an American Express card, a walking Visa card. A white person did not have to work. All they'd do in the morning was get up and get his two slaves off to work and lay in wait for them to come back. He didn't have to work. On the eve of the Civil War, to show you what that means in terms of having a slave, black people in the South on the eve of the Civil War picked and sold alone over 1 billion pounds of cotton and was sold just to England alone. England paid 48 cents a pound for that cotton. That money from that cotton gave every white person in the United States $500 without even working on the eve of the Civil War. So what I'm telling you is that they didn't get their wealth from working hard. And I went back and looked in 1860 and said, in 1860, what did black folk own, even the free blacks? In that time, poor blacks that were free in America, blacks in general, they had one half of 1% of the wealth in 1860. I checked again in 1960 and see what they'd accomplished. After the Civil War, World War I, Depression, World War II, Vietnam War, Korean War, and the Civil Rights Movement, see what blacks went up 1% in 100 years and all those catastrophic national international events. The wealth was frozen in 1860. And even today, blacks control less than 2% of the wealth. You have not moved. Blacks don't own anything that has any value over 2%. So what I'm saying to you now is that that's where the wealth came from. And starting from 1860 up to now, that became what we call inherited wealth. The white society nailed that wealth down. So that now that it's passed on from one white generation to the next, to their offspring, children, parents to child, it's been going on now for 15 or 16 generations. And what does that mean for you as a black person? That means that the average white person, because racism exists, and without racism it wouldn't be important, because racism exists, every white person is born with 87% of what he needs to be successful in life with his skin color and coming into the earth. All he needs to do is be successful now is get a scheme in his head and persevere, because everything he needs is either in his culture, in his community, in his neighborhood, in his family, in his school, in his business, and in his government. He's going to run into it sooner or later just by staying a straight course. And for that reason, you see,
Ted Turner.
Hey, brother.
Yes, sir.
You know, let's start with that real quick. To touch on that last part about the inequalities, about the school system and education system.
Yeah, well.
People trying to call me now.
Go ahead and take your call.
No.
Okay, well, go ahead.
No, go ahead, brother.
No, I was just going to say, he's right on it again. You know, I find very little I could disagree with him on. The only thing that I would say in terms of a difference of opinion is that now many white people who thought that they were a part of this thing have now finally realized that they're not a part of it either. And as a matter of fact, there's a large number of very prominent white people, I shouldn't say large, let's say significant number, of well-known white people who are saying they are not going to vote any longer. Because, you see, what he's talking about and what I'm talking about is there has to be a political revolution in this country in order for electoral politics to have any sustenance. It has absolutely no sustenance. It is a criminal combine controlled by two corporate structures, check their status, 501c4 status, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, who are subsidiaries of the Corporation of the United States of America, which is wholly owned by both what's called the New Establishment, and people can Google that term, it'll be self-evident for them, as well as the Old Establishment, Rothschild, Rockefeller, those people. The new establishment, Bill Gates, Michael Eisner, Michael Ovitz, Ted Turner, ad infinitum. The thing that separates them is where the WASP was the primary player in the old establishment, that's the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, who ran the cotton mills and owned the plantations. The new establishment is primarily technological and telecommunications, which is for the most part the domain of the new establishment, which is controlled predominantly 99.9% by Jews, who have basically supplanted the WASP establishment and are kicking them to the curb. This is why your Congress, those major banks we talked about, the international banking system, are all controlled by Jews. They're the ones who are calling the shots now, okay? And so they're kicking white folks and everybody else to the curb. And outside of this country, there's a thing going on called austerity. Austerity is an economic construct. It says you cannot pay back your debt. In order for you to pay off your creditors, we will loan you money, but you must privatize your entire country. That's what's going on in Greece, where all of the Greek architecture in terms of government-controlled sustenance is being auctioned off to the highest bidder. That's privatization. In Spain, the same process is going on right now, and the people who have voted consistently against this are finally seeing the futility of electoral politics, because they now see that their politics are controlled by those same corporations that are pushing these policies through the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, both of whom are being governed by the central bank of central banks, the Bank of International Settlements, which sits in Basel, Switzerland, that no one hardly ever talks about. Now, I've been talking about that bank for about 25 years now and how dangerous it is, okay? That's the Nazi bank. That's what it is. They control all of the central banks. I'm talking about like the Federal Reserve. That's why your Federal Reserve banks and your central banks all have Jews running them. I don't care where you go on this planet. That is why every country that's being destabilized by the CIA, the United States government, that's Libya, Syria, Iran,
the thing that separates all those countries from the countries that they are being attacked by is these countries control their economic salvation. They control their central banks. China controls its central bank as well. So they cannot be manipulated by the banking system. That is why they are being removed, and the establishment immediately of central banking structures in this country, even before the gunpowder and the smoke clears in these countries.
Wow. Wow, that's
Yes, it is. I fear you, brother. But with all of that, I'm gonna say this, brother. The gift that black people have that can override all of this is our spiritual essence. The essence of which is what the white people are attempting to put in place now to circumvent that, because changes are occurring in the cosmos that dictate changes on the planet and by extension, its people. And they're geoengineering the planet. They're putting all kind of stuff in the food. They're putting mind-altering drugs all over the planet and have been doing so for years. They're putting fluoride in the water, and they've been doing that since 1945 along with MKUltra to, in fact, prevent the opening of the pineal gland, which is due for this particular time, okay? And they understand this, so that's why you got geoengineering in the skies. That's why you got mind-altering drugs being given to the children at 4 and 5 years old in the school system. These drugs that they're giving the children basically disrupt the hormones in the body, causing male hormones to become female hormones. And so you can begin to see, since the 1970s, when they deconstructed the school system and began to put these drugs called SSRIs, by the way, brother, SSRIs are serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Serotonin is a chemical construct that's produced by the pineal gland. That's your third eye. That's your intuition. That will give you the power to see what's coming before it gets here and to take the appropriate precautions. The scientific community understands this because they've done the research in Kemet, where quantum physics, which is the science of the day, is based on the origin of African spirituality, which is metaphysics. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are part and parcel of the same thing. We talk about economic self-determination. It has to be grounded in spiritual awareness of the powers that's innate in black people. That's why we always target it, no matter where we are on the planet. It's not by accident. Their scientists have a Frankenstein mentality. And as such, brother, our young people are being inundated with extremely low frequencies to get them to vibrate at a certain level where the technologies are already in place, including and specifically blue flashing lights, which alter behavior. And you see these blue flashing lights all over the black community, everywhere you go. So what I'm trying to show people is when you hear about genetically modified foods that have sterilants in them to sterilize the women, part of the eugenics program. When you see Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1992 write the book called Out of Control, where he said the greatest threat to world government would be urban unrest, it became necessary to destabilize and lock up as many black men as you could because they were the threat. Because they are not predicated on fear. They weren't raised in the church, which is the citadel of fear. and you cannot operate, you cannot function on this planet spiritually, properly, if you, your foundation is based on fear.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Brother, Let me hold on a minute. I want to play another part of this. That was deep, brother.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, brother.
Let me play another part of this Claude Anderson piece here, man, and contemplate what you were just saying.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Got a little technical problem here. Yeah, while I get that straight, listen to this.
Now to understand the struggle, to understand pain and dues, and the pain of my people, your people, all around the globe, you gotta feel me, it's in the music, use it.
What you know about juggling jobs and struggling hard and chasing dreams? What you know about having no car, rent being due, and no blame made? What you know about sacrificing all your wants for all your needs? What you know about loving your child just to find out that ain't your
pain?
Dodging them cops to make ends meet. What you know about the lights being off, the gas being off, and no food to eat? What you know about Goodwill clothes, while your friends dress fly in junior high? What you know about Grandma's words when she said, one day, boy, you gon' shine? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
You only know what you think you know.
My struggle.
And that's one of the triggering mechanisms for the Civil War. They didn't have that kind of money. As a matter of fact, from the period I just told you about, from 1710 to the Civil War, two out of every three people in the United States that had over $100,000, two out of every three lived in the South. A white plantation owner in the South who had black slaves had 400 times the wealth of a northern slummer. A white person in the South with two slaves had a value equal to any non-farmer in the North. If I take the white person in the North and add his house, his land, his animal, his tools, and his savings together, if you own two black slaves in the South, you had as much as a white person in the North. In the South, up until the Civil War, a black slave was an American Express card, a walking Visa card. A white person did not have to work. All they'd do in the morning was get up and get his two slaves off to work and lay in wait for them to come back. He didn't have to work. On the eve of the Civil War, to show you what that means in terms of having a slave, black people in the South on the eve of the Civil War picked and sold alone over 1 billion pounds of cotton and was sold just to England alone. England paid 48 cents a pound for that cotton. That money from that cotton gave every white person in the United States $500 without even working on the eve of the Civil War. So what I'm telling you is that they didn't get their wealth from working hard. And I went back and looked in 1860 and said, in 1860s, what did black folk own, even the free blacks? In that time, poor blacks that were free in America, blacks in general, they had one-half of 1% of the wealth in 1860. I checked again in 1960 and see what they'd accomplished. After the Civil War, World War I, Depression, World War II, Vietnam War, Korean War, and the Civil Rights Movement. See what blacks went up 1% in 100 years and all those catastrophic national and international events. The wealth was frozen in 1860. And even today, blacks own and control less than 2% of the wealth. You have not moved. Blacks don't own anything that has any value over 2%. So what I'm saying to you now is that that's where the wealth came from. And starting from 1860 up to now, that became what was called inherited wealth. The white society nailed that wealth down. So that now that it's passed on from one white generation to the next, to their offspring, children, parents to child, it's been going on now for 15 or 16 generations. And what does that mean for you as a black person? That means that the average white person, because racism exists, and without racism it wouldn't be important, because racism exists, every white person is born with 87% of what he needs to be successful in life with his skin color and coming into the earth. All he needs to do is be successful now is get a scheme in his head and persevere. Because everything he needs is either in his culture, in his community, in his neighborhood, in his family, in his school, in his business, and in his government. He's going to run into it sooner or later just by staying a straight course. And for that reason, you see, Ted Turner and Donald Trump can go bankrupt, become a millionaire, go bankrupt, become a millionaire over and over again. Doesn't make any difference. A black person, if he ever becomes a millionaire one time, you've got to hold him because he'd never do it twice. Because, see, a black person is born with zero. Why is he born with zero? When a white child comes in with 87%, a black child comes in with zero. Because it's called inherited wealth. I just told you everything is locked into the white culture. And so a black child cannot inherit anything because what we've been focusing on. We have been dealing with symptoms and not problems. For all these years, we talk about how can a black kid cannot inherit food stamps. He can inherit welfare. He can inherit public housing. He cannot inherit a job. So he comes in at zero. He cannot compete against a white child because as parents, you're letting them down. You're not giving your child a fair break. He can't compete. And I don't care how much you go out and scream at black kids about what they should be doing. They're not crazy.
You're not giving them any tools. You're trying to motivate kids. You cannot motivate a child to be successful. Motivation only means giving people interest in doing something. What you got to do, working with Dr. Price, you got to empower these young people. There's a difference between motivating people and empowering. I see all these blacks running out of country, so I'm a motivational speaker. That's a pimp and a hustler. You don't motivate black folks, you empower them. Now, here's the difference between motivation and power. I can motivate everybody in this auditorium this morning to want to go to Europe and lay on the beach and enjoy a good life, lay at the hotel and eat well. I can motivate you. But if I don't give you the money, the tools, y'all understand what I'm saying? And I don't give you the tools, the ship, the boat, the airplane, the hotel, I'm playing games, am I not? And that's what they keep doing with black folk. They always want to motivate black folk rather than empower them. And what I talk about all the time on this country, and I'm going to work with Dr. Price on, is to give you those tools. You give black folk the tools, and they'll do the job. Okay? I'm watching the clock. I don't know how much time I've spent so far. Am I flying? 47 minutes? Okay. I got 47 minutes. Let me wrap it up then. So give them the tools. They can be successful. But they always want to motivate blacks. And that's why we came out of slavery. What they did, they gave blacks what I call non-economic emancipation. Then we came out of Jim Crow, and they gave us non-economic integration. The money never entered the picture. Why didn't it enter the picture? Because here's why it's important for you all to remember this. Because at the Civil War, that was a dividing line. That was the first time that land became more important than a black slave. Okay? And that's why you all didn't get the 40 acres and the mule. Okay? Because that was the first time when they said nobody could ever own slaves anymore, then the value jumped from a slave to land. And they said, then blacks won't get any. You never got your 40 acres and a mule. That means you were vulnerable. You couldn't compete. You had no place to go. You were homeless, penniless, and you suffered 260 years of planned ignorance, so you couldn't do anything. And so then the second compromise was committed. Immediately after the Civil War was over, the North then sold blacks out. They looked at the poor whites in the South and said, well, now that we've taken all the wealth out of the South, because what we really want to do, what we're fighting the Civil War over, was to take the wealth from the South and move it to the North. And now that we got the wealth, you all can have the South again, and you can have those blacks. And so immediately in 1866, the South passed what's called the Black Code. The Black Code was nothing but the same code what I told you earlier in 1705 called the Slave Code. So it re-enslaved black folks. And you went back into second slavery. What they call Jim Crowism. Now, what was the effect of Jim Crowism? Let me show you. Up at that point in time, black folk were the primary labor force in the United States because nobody else wanted to work. All whites in America want to be the genteel class. They want to be the lazy class. They want to be able to be the aristocrats. They didn't want to work. They didn't want to get their hands dirty. But what they had done, though, by that time, black folk were the caulkers, the mechanics, the bricklayers, the plumbers. Blacks made up almost 50 to 60% of all the workers in the factories and tobacco factories and the iron factories and the mines in the East. In the South alone, after the Civil War, according to the 1865 census, that out of 120,000 artisans mean educated or skilled people in the South, people who could do the job, the work, out of 120,000, 100,000 were blacks. By 1867, it got tricky. Now that the war is over, America then started their little game with the immigrants again. So between 1866 and 1880, they brought in 12 million European immigrants into America. And guess what happened to poor blacks again? They got booted out of those positions. They got kicked out. In the North, they created something called UNIONS, unions.
They created unions and kicked blacks out of all those jobs I just told you about as mechanics and plumbers and engineers and bricklayers and all this kind of stuff. They kicked them out and started unions. Then they put a clause in it's a white-only union. They kept blacks out of jobs until up until the 1960s, almost 100 years, just shut them out. They did the same thing in the South. They created what's called farmer alliances. Even though 55 to 60% of all the farmers in the South were black, they created farmer alliances so black folk could not raise their products or sell their products and get to market. That's why that's why the black farmers were crying over in Tuskegee. Said nobody. In fact, I just made the front pages of the Washington Post. What day was it? Thursday. Front page of Washington, what happened to the black farmers? Right today. They can't raise anything. They can't raise their crops. If they raise, they don't have a distribution system. They don't have a market because they don't have a community. Nobody can get the crops from Tuskegee, from the South, to New York City. Because, see, the white won't let you use their system to do it unless they control it, manipulate, and they get the profit and the advantage. So those poor farmers down there are losing their land at twice, or three times the rate of white farmers. In 1920, we had 20 billion acres of land, 20 million acres of farmland in America, in the United States alone, the black. It's down to less than about 400,000 acres now. You're going out of existence. And as the food crop moves further and further away from black folk into the hands of two or three major corporations, you're in serious trouble. Because 78% of all the blacks in America now live in 10 large cities. You got a 10-day food supply. If somebody wanted to, they can starve all the blacks in America to death in less than 2 weeks. Your farm, you're losing your farmlands and everything else. Nobody want to make an issue out of it. Washington Post had the front pages saying the black farm was almost gone. But anyhow, so what happened then after the Civil War, the immigrants came in, bumped blacks out, froze them out. Some people say, well, black folk can compete if we educate them. Wrong. Didn't work. When black folk came out of slavery in 1866, they had a 98% illiteracy rate. That means only 2% of the blacks in the United States could read and write in 1860. But by 1900, blacks reduced their illiteracy rate from 98% down to 40. Blacks learned faster than all those white immigrants that came into America. Blacks cut their illiteracy rate faster than all the European immigrants. So when I went back and did analysis on job mobility and on money and wealth, guess what happened? The whites that came in, they went up, blacks went down, which means education was not the factor. So you tell a child to get an education, and you don't deal with racism, it won't do any good. And I got blacks all over the country telling me, Dr. Anson, it's time for black folks to put racism behind them. Black people cannot put racism behind you because you didn't put it in front of yourself. You don't have the power to put anything behind you. And the most dangerous thing you can do is to start talking about cutting yourself away from your history and the fact of racism. Because let me tell you all why. And remember this. There's only three ways we could have possibly gotten into our dilemma. Either we were where we are because God wished it up here, or because we are genetically inferior down here, or because somebody's been playing games in social engineering. One of those three. Now, I don't believe God wished black folk to be in this dilemma. But yet, the dominant white society taught that and used their churches from 1600 up until 1860 to say that God wished it. The blacks somehow were smited, being an offshoot of Ham. Remember that? They used the Bible to teach that black folk were inferior and that you were justifiably slaves. Then from 1860s up until present day, they've been using genetics. That's why you got a book all called The Bell Curve. Then that you're genetically inferior. That's why you're in your dilemma. And what I tell black folks, both of those are tales. You're where you are because you've been socially engineered. The last thing. People have been playing games with you, manipulating the circumstances, controlling you. And if somebody has socially engineered you into your dilemma, the only way you're going to get out is for somebody to take the responsibility of what? Socially engineering you out. And that's why I created the Harvest Institute.
Understand everything that's happened to black folks, and I'm trying my best to... Hey, brother, you still there?
Yes, sir.
I couldn't have spoken it, because I've said the same thing for 25, almost 30 years, brother. We're in the middle of a social engineering construct with everything predicated on psychology. You can't get a job today without filling out a psychological profile. Your children are being psychologically profiled at the age of 4 years old and prescribed drugs based on that profile. You can't go anywhere, brother, without being psychologically profiled. And even the technology today is predicated on programming the machinery to be able to respond based on a psychological profile that's at the foundation of the programming. That's how heavy this stuff gets, brother. But I don't want people to go away from us thinking that we can't win. If I think for one moment that we couldn't win, I wouldn't be talking to you, brother. I'd be trying to get out the country and find me somewhere to go. But I know we can win because I've done the research, which says what they're going to be doing 20 years from now. Unfortunately, brother, yours truly has been, for the most part, shut out. Because people who know me, I'm very well known, but I'm, for the most part, despised because my allegiance is to my people 2,000%, because 100 ain't enough. And I don't compromise the things that I know for anybody, because we have a track record of over 90% in predicting what's going to happen, and then those things happen. And all of that is based on doing consistent research to study the movement of the people in power. That's what we do.
So we do. Hey, brother, let me just take a quick break. And when I come back, I got some people holding. Let's see if anybody wants to say anything.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, man. You don't know. Ross Ruben, Mystic. Ross Zachary. Oh, Lion.
I tell you, no. What are you doing, Ben?
Holding up strong. Yeah.
Hey, I tell you, no.
You have become a billionaire, yeah, yeah. Liar. You have become a billionaire, yeah. Liar in a jungle, liar in a bed. Gonna mix with a jungle, will take that won't be paid. Yeah, liar in a jungle, yeah, liar in a bed.
Your sweat and your toil to make you empty. For a man come pop off your coin, can't find a food to eat. Oh yeah, I see them coming, trying to make me a victim. Rubber man come rob the clothing. Tell me why they would plant such robbery on a poor ghetto youth, struggling so hard to survive. Oh yeah. Tell me why they would plant such suffering on a poor old lady coming from a 9 to 5. Yeah. What kind of man you are? Rub the poor down the lane, I think you reach far. Down in the ghetto, every youth have a scar. Get caught up in robbery or tribal war.
With a village Buddha, with reverence of Farai, not Allah, not Buddha. With a village Buddha, you get on you that you should have. I like us to let them know that love is for us, for us. I and I am so certain and so strong that love is for us. So your medication, in moderation, love. Listen, healing, adivation, through moderation, through conversation. You can see the natural meditation. So your medication, in moderation, show most by the most meditation. Took your medication, good inspiration. It increases physical vibration. Cut it up on the bone, pack it up in a metallic. Me not protect no negativity, no normality. Good way forward, day time and practice. I am meditation, then just can't stop this. Hold up it up in a me wrist, last so sweet and bliss. Natural mystic, yeah, you know it exists. Before you beg for more, like a liberty twist, I'm a confession and peace. So your medication, in moderation, love. Listen, healing, adulation, through moderation, through conversation. Keep dancing in a shall meditation. So your medication, in moderation, show most by the most medication. So your medication, through inspiration.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Oh, who am I talking to? Yes.
Is the show still on?
Yes, I think the brother just hasn't gotten back. He may be having some technical difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm here. Oh, here I am. I'm here.
Ah, there you are.
Yeah. Hi, Jackie. How you doing? I'm still here. I had muted myself.
Oh, well,
man.
How are you?
All right.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, brother, you know, like I was saying, that Claude Anderson thing is something we can really look into.
Yeah.
All these plans out here with how to get people motivated and get involved in a plan.
Yeah,
how much more tragedy has to be put out in front of people for them to get involved?
I think we need to go out there on the streets and get our people. I've been dying to do this with a group of brothers and sisters who are real about what we do and not looking to run for some office based on them being so-called activists. That's the model. You know, we got people who border on total illiteracy sitting out here as politicians representing black people and couldn't put a complete sentence together if their lives depended on it. Now, I'm not going to call no names, but we know that to be true.
Hey, man, hey, you know what? You know, Jesse Jackson Jr., man, I'm going to say this again. Dude, where is he at? In Arizona? He's at some clinic or something, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he you know, only reason he, look, they about to go ahead and come down hard on him. He about to go to jail and all this other stuff, man. That's the only thing wrong with him.
Yes, sir. You couldn't have a Rob Blagojevich making a deal with a politician and goes to jail, and the other end of the deal not be discussed. Jesse Jackson Jr., and as quiet as his kept brother, Rahm Emanuel, and Barack Obama were attempting to broker deals for themselves with Blagojevich, so they shut the investigation down at the point that Rahm Emanuel was getting involved heavily.
Hey, man, you telling too many Chicago politics secrets now. We can't be going that far now.
Well, I mean, you know, brother, I cut my teeth on Chicago politics, okay? So you're talking to part of the reason why Jesse Jackson had to leave Chicago when he moved to D.C., because we put so much pressure on him in the 80s, going back to look at his entire history with all of the deals that he made. And Jesse Jr., is an extension of the backwardness that has infected black people, who basically put people in positions of authority on them based on personality and good looks, who have absolutely no history of doing anything for black people in the community. He has no history of doing anything for black people.
He's a rich role model.
Yes, sir. Soon to be, hopefully, an imprisoned role model. And they could take his wife and put her in a cell right next to him if they choose. Take Ricky Hinden and put him in another adjoining cell. Or who's the other politician who's still running, but he's indicted and they censured him in Springfield from the west side?
The preacher dude.
I can't think of his name. But we've had Ike Carruthers, and the list just goes on and on. Brother, I can go back and name you 15 to 20 black politicians in the last 25 years from Chicago who've gone to jail trying to play that game.
But here's something else, though. But it's almost in every major city, you know, that the black politicians seem to be doing the same thing. They eating out the same bowl.
Yes, sir. That's because, and look at it now, brother. They've decided that they don't fight the current paradigm, which says that Hispanics are the new niggas. They don't fight that. What they do is become part Hispanic themselves. They looking to register Juan Valdez, okay, so that he can vote for them, even though he's illegal. That doesn't matter. As brother said, Haitians tried to come over here, and the so-called first black president sent Colin Powell to Haiti to say, how dare you attempt to remove yourselves from the shackle of neocolonialism that we have you under in Haiti, with the very few light-skinned blacks controlling all of the dark-skinned blacks, just like you got here, okay? Just like wherever you find black people, go down to Trinidad, you find the same thing. Go to Jamaica, you find the same thing. Okay? And this is a systematic program that's been put in place to, for the most part, retard the economic self-determinational efforts of African people all over the globe. In Africa, they call it neocolonialism. Those neocolonialists, for the most part, are still in place to this day. That's why African people can be manipulated through the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, because their leaders are compromised. So that's the real deal, brother, but I'm going to say it again.
at the grassroots level, people are thoroughly dissatisfied that we thought we had a black man in Barack Obama, but those of us in Chicago knew that there was nothing black about that and that he would continue the retardation of economic self-determination by basically financing the talented tenth to the detriment of the rest of African people in this country. And that's what he's done. And then they say, well, if you vote for this man, people died. Look, when you hear this conundrum about people died for our right to vote, here's how you answer them, black people. I come from the vein of Denmark Vesey, okay? Dessalines and other blacks who were runaway slaves and fought against white supremacy. They didn't acquiesce to it. They died fighting against this system, not compromising themselves into security by trying to become a part of a white supremacist system that's dedicated to the removal and the subjugation of African people all over this planet. So that's how I answer when they try to tell me Martin King died. No, he didn't die. He was assassinated. He didn't fight the system. He protested against it. Dessalines and Denmark Vesey and these brothers, they fought it.
Everybody's line is open.
Go ahead,
everybody, hold on, brother. Everybody's line is open. If you have a question or comment, just go ahead and speak up.
Hey, I'm Chef. This is Brother Commit.
Commit, how you feeling, brother?
I'm good. I finally was able to catch your show again. I'm still at work, but I've been listening in diligently. And I appreciate the guest you have talking, and I appreciate using Claude Anderson's work to illustrate some things we should know. I guess my question is, what are the options that we have given the current situation on taking control of our communities? Because as a bookseller, a business owner, entrepreneur, community activist, or actionist, actually, and a lot of things that I'm still doing, what can we do to combat the nigger factory that we find ourselves combating in every new person we meet?
Let me take a little piece of that, brother, and then you can respond. What we've been advocating for many years, and this is before the internet, so you know we had to scream loud and was still badly heard, because the avenues for expressing what we must do were being basically closed to us because we don't adhere to the construct of personality-oriented leadership. We must build economic institutions, what we call corporations, because that's what's governing everything today, to neutralize the effect that the corporate structures are having on us through the laws that are being passed, et cetera. We must put these corporations in place to, in fact, employ our people in the communities where we live. We can start by simply people putting up whatever you can toward the corporate structure in your city or several. I don't adhere to the concept of one corporation in a city. We need to have many and do joint ventures with each other, where corporations give us the latitude to not just be able to cross state lines and aid our people in other cities to build up their economic community, but to also it gives us the leverage to move around outside of the country to establish connections with African people who think just like us, where we can do financing of manufacturing concerns where African countries aren't in the stipulations, under the stipulations, based on environmentalism, which is basically choked off any effort to do manufacturing in this country. Because if you put certain pollutants in the air, you will charge extra money based on the number of pollutants that you put in the air, called credits. Okay, these are carbon credits. And so they basically, this entire hemisphere is going to be devoid of any major manufacturing that puts pollutants in the air. That's why we must begin to branch out outside of this country, where we can have products produced in African countries to build them up, set up situations where we send our people back and forth to Africa to reconnect with our roots and to bring those products to this country in the businesses, storefronts, if you will, where we employ our own people to sell products that we manufacture and control.
Thank you, brother. And I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
The follow-up question is to form these businesses, these economic entities that we're going to need to protect ourselves and to thrive and flourish, will we have to change our status to the system, or do we have to just focus on the so-called Negroes to just come together?
No. But I,
and the reason
I ask
is because Obama did sign the indigenous rights paperwork,
yes,
which the
I'm
other
aware
president
of that.
Didn't.
And
I'm
he
also said at Tom Joyner's show, or one of the shows, it was either Tavis Smiley or Tom Joyner, where he said, how does it feel to be the first black president? Obama did say, don't ever call me that, because that has no legal standing at law. And so I'm wondering...
Right.
Is our status and our labels that we go by, is that a hindrance to the economic development that we need?
No, because what we can do is to seek dual citizenship with any African country that we feel comfortable in doing that with. And trust me, brother, there are Africans who will love to do this. They're waiting for us because we are the most educated group. Okay, so we need to have a dual citizen.
Don't we have to come? Don't we have to come under another name than Negro and Black?
No, sir.
Collective name, not. I mean, you know, because what I understand from the studies I've done, and I've studied a lot of various aspects of our culture and history, what I've learned is that we are still basically minorities because we are, to the law in this country, we are treated as minors who are wards of the state. Because we have never claimed anything else.
I understand. I'm going to say this again. We can, and here's what I suggest that people do, and I've suggested this on more than one occasion. We need to contact the African consulates within the major cities. We need to bring representatives from the African consulates in to speak to our people to aid us in the process of applying for dual citizenship. Because in some cases, they have to do that with their offspring because they come to this country and have their children here, and guess what? They have dual citizenship. So it's not as difficult as people might think. The problem is there's no system in place to get it done on a consistent basis.
Asante Sana for your answer. I appreciate it.
Hotep, brother. Asante Sana.
Okay.
Hotep.
Anybody else got any questions? Nobody?
Oh, we got to have at least one.
Everybody, line is up.
I'm enjoying listening. I have no question.
Got no comments?
Well, let me go ahead.
Nah, not really. You know, stuff come up, but you know, the subject keeps winding.
Well, let me add something here. You know, I'm never at a loss of words, as you might expect after 30 years of research and busting at the seams with these things and having to fight my own people. Because 20 years ago, we were 20 years ahead of everybody else. And then now to see the things that we talked about 20 years ago manifest themselves today, that's why I have the credibility that I do around the country with a lot of people. Because I still keep in contact with people that I met around the country. And they remember the things that I told them, up to and including what the internet was about. I'm old school. I'm almost 60. So I spent a lot of my 20s in libraries reading books. I'd go to them libraries from sun up to sundown, okay? And people say, well, Rob, are you for reparations? And I always tell them, and, you know, they laugh, but I'm deadly serious. I already got mine because I was able to appropriate that's another word for steal, many books from the libraries, okay? And that's what my library is based upon. So I don't want their money because I know their value system, like their morals, change at the drop of a hat. What I want is the knowledge that I can put inside of me that can aid my people toward the movement for self-determination. They can never take that away from me. And because I'm spiritually based now, with all of the information about the five platonic solids and the dodecahedron and the Kabbalah and the tarot and the sacred geometry, all of these things I've studied ad infinitum. So I'm spiritually based and know how to use these things to offset the frequency wars in terms of manipulating people by using extremely low frequency weapons, i.e. the blue light that I mentioned earlier, but it's even in the hip-hop. It's in the hip-hop. It's in the music. And it's important for our people to understand these concepts at a very basic level because it will help us to begin to reestablish the respect between black men and black women that have been neutralized based on the manipulation of our thinking and our movement with the extremely low-frequency weapons where we find all our radio stations in the black community, no matter where you go, down on the low end of the dial. That's not by accident. That's by design. But again, many of our people don't even recognize it because the technology is so finite that unless you know you're being manipulated, there's no way possible you can respond to it. So these things are real. We can show you examples. Case point, everything that's going on in Chicago in 2012 happened in California in 1992, 20 years ago. Take a look at it. You got hip-hop artists with beef fighting each other. Ain't that what you had with East Coast, West Coast? We got drugs flooding into the black community. Back then, you had crack cocaine with Freeway Ricky Ross, who pointed out that there was a CIA construct. In Chicago, we got Fast and Furious, where one of the major heads of the cartels was on trial. No talk about this now. Not one word. And he pointed out that he was given carte blanche to bring as much drugs into Chicago as he wanted. And that's primarily to build an economic foundation for the Mexicans who were coming to Chicago. That's under Fast and Furious. Testimony by one of the leaders of the drug cartels who pointed out clearly, without hesitation, that he was working with the CIA. He was a CIA informant. And that they were also bringing the guns, just like in California. I'm showing you how the social engineering works. Yes, go ahead, sir.
So all of these killings that they've been talking about, like especially before the summer and after the summer, that's been going on in Chicago, those are because of the guns that was brought in from the Fast and Furious program?
Yeah, that's where the guns came from. That's why they're high-tech.
They systematically destroy us, and it's like TV and entertainment. It is the new knowledge today. And
yeah.
What's going on today is it's stuff like this guy on YouTube. I don't even think I watched his videos probably in like 2 years. This guy, the Industry Unplugged or something like that, where he makes these videos about the Illuminati this and the Illuminati and hip-hop. And, it's, you know, it could be some truth to what he's saying. Most of it is more, I would say, a mind control, another form of mind control. But now everybody, they figure this out, something that people was talking about. You can look at somebody like Anthony Hilder talking about the Illuminati back in the 60s. And these people, they get a hold of this now because of their recent platform for entertainment, the internet. And now they think they, like, I'm smarter than the average bear now because I know the Rothschilds and I know Rockefeller. And it's crazy in that the hip-hop, and it's sad. You cannot take hip-hop away from people. They want to kill you. But
no.
Ben Allen, he did a really good, he had a lecture series he was doing called the Hidden Hand in Hip-Hop and the Effemination of the Black Male. And when he started going through this, I don't know if you, Rob, or anybody else is familiar with Lennon Honor or any of his work, but Lennon, he is very, very detailed. And when Lennon started breaking down lyrics and he got the Public Enemy, and you know Professor Griff now was on the lecture circuit and everything, you know, Lennon didn't address something specifically towards Professor Griff, but he was just saying, you know, look at this album cover. You know, he's not saying that this dude is gay, but look at the entities behind this and what they put in front of you. And this guy, who's supposed to be some, like, pioneer in hip-hop, he threatened his man. He threatened his wife that was pregnant at the time. I mean, it was kind of like a stalking. You could have seen it on Facebook, and this grown-ass 50-year-old man posting stuff on this man's page. It got really crazy. And because of that, we lost a really good lecture series. I thought everybody should have seen that, and they could see how this hip-hop is controlling the youth. It does not produce men. It does not produce women. It does not promote family. Everything that you should be ashamed of, it promotes as something good. And people should have seen this lecture series. But because of this man on the lecture circuit, who, by the way, is going around saying crazy things about Jay-Z and Damon Dash, he told this man, you did not ask me if you can talk about me. And I'm thinking, did you go ask these other people, could you talk about them? But people follow him. And I'm just saying, this is just the craziness that we deal with, how people get so caught up in different forms of entertainment that we don't see the manipulation that's going on right in front of us. And because of that, I don't think that we are all the same. We are not all the same, and we cannot come together as a group.
Well, I let me put it like this. I've been saying we are not all the same for who knows how long, as far back as I can remember, okay? And that's not the issue for me. The issue is identifying those of us who are, because those of us who are far exceed those of us who are not. And my thing is to identify those who want to deal with the problem, who want to become a part owner in their own destiny. Because when I talk about forming corporate structures, I'm not talking about me being the head of anything. I'm talking about teaching our people from a systemic point of view, because that's what corporations are. They are systems. How to maneuver around the madness and to recognize the madness before it gets to them. All corporations exist primarily off one paradigm, and that is R&D. And everybody knows what that means. Research and then development. They don't make a move without the research department telling them what are the prospects of making this move, pro or con. And then they put capital towards that movement based on what the R&D department tells them. I'm saying in order for black people to systematically get out of this madness that we are in, we must develop corporate structures that have black research and development arms embedded in them. People are talking about putting in place think tanks. A think tank without an economic foundation means absolutely nothing, because all the white think tanks are financed through the foundation structures that come from the corporate structures. So I'm saying we need to be about the business of identifying the people who want to move forward and do it. Because one of the things I've noticed in my 60 years on the planet just about, and that is that black people always get on board the train when it's moving, because we operate on a different time scale than everybody else. So we got to rush and run to catch up.
But understanding that dynamic, that's all right. We know how to deal with our people because we know we are like that. There used to be a thing called color people's time years ago because we didn't adhere to the time that's basically European-centered. So I understand that dynamic. I cut my teeth, again, in the libraries when there wasn't no internet. We had to read the books about the Illuminati and Adam Weishaupt. So I'm very much aware that what distresses me today is that many people talk about Illuminati and want to make Jay-Z the head. I don't hear the European names and the corporate names of the people who really are illuminated. And as quiet as it's kept, sister, Illuminati, and I'm going to mention this book for people to go and get, Illuminati merely means illuminated one. That is an ancient African construct which comes straight out of Kemet based on people who were initiated into the mystery system. They had access to their own inner construct, which allowed for them to enlighten themselves. They almost glowed. Go ahead, sister. Are you there?
I'm listening.
So I kept hearing some interruptions. I didn't know if that was you or the technology. But anyway, I don't know about the brother. I know about the people who are putting Jay-Z out there, you know, and that kind of thing. I'm going to leave them people to their own devices because we got too much work out here. And I'm going to tell you something else. Wherever I go and I'm in contact with people all over the planet, they're so appreciative of the work that I do that they literally sent me donations. And I send them DVDs that I've done over the course of the last 30 years. Okay? And they are elated with the information because, like I said, told brother when I first came on here, you'll never find Robert X talking about anything without quoting from the documentation because I want people to be able to go and get the documentation and read the stuff for themselves. And more importantly, when you go to the websites that I use, you will find other information there or other websites that may be similar that I didn't check. So it'll help your growth and development by checking other websites that I didn't check. But everything I do is extremely, extremely, I document more than anybody you ever talk to. I'll put it like that. And you can go online to Sister the Truth to Power blog talk and pull down some of the programs that I did with Sister Beverly D. And I don't do very many of these things because I don't want to get trapped into the personality thing. So I've turned down about 25 different blog talk radio programs. This is about the third or fourth one I've done because I don't want to become a radio personality. That's not my thing. I'd rather talk to the brothers in the street and on the corners. I'd rather give a lecture on the street and on the corners because that's where this stuff needs to be heard, not on blog talk. And while I got a lot of respect for some of the brothers and sisters who exist on blog talk, some of it has become nothing more than, you know, invite me here so I can do this. And, you know, I don't want to be overly critical, but y'all know what I'm saying because it's out here. It's out here. So I like to let the work speak, and then I can be quiet. So, sister, don't trip on the fact that, you know, you go to the blog talk or you see these things on YouTube. I call the people who exist in the area of YouTube because some people have become nothing more than products of YouTube. They have no history of anything. They watch DVDs and read a little something, and boom, they know.
Well, that's what I was saying, now people are so dumbed down that what makes you knowledgeable is if you have seen a certain YouTube video. That's why people run around saying, oh, yeah, I know about the Illuminati, Jay-Z the head, he worked for David Rockefeller, blah, blah, blah. This is stuff, and they repeat these things because they don't know how to research I think
they have no historical context. But we got to teach them.
Before, when he was, we went over the fact that people, they don't want to research. If it's not put to you in the form of entertainment, then that's the only way you're going to get it. And my thing is, it seemed like it could come to a period in time for us where we got to stop trying to force people to be knowledgeable of their history, and we got to move on without them.
Sister, here's one of my favorite sayings. And again, this is from the metaphysical aspect of who and what I am, or the spiritual aspect, depending on how you want to look at it. Time dictates all movement. I'm not talking about the clock that we wear. Again, that's a European construct based on Greenwich Mean Time. That's a European construct. I'm talking about the movement that exists within the cosmos that dictates all movement on this planet. I go into a thing where I deal with spirals. Look at the tip of your finger. What is that? It's a spiral. You call it your fingerprint. Look at your tongue. It exists in a spiral. Look at your hair. Your hair grows in a spiral. Look at your DNA. Your DNA grows in a spiral. Look at every plant on the planet. This is where the sacred geometry comes into play with all these spirals and understanding what a spiral really is. All plants, if you cut a tree open, it grows in a spiral. In the world of sacred geometry, they call that the Fibonacci number, okay? The Fibonacci cycle, if you will. Things growing in spirals. All plants grow in spirals. Animals, people, your eyeball is a spiral, okay? What does that mean? We are entities of light. We respond to light. Darkness brings forth light. 97% of our DNA has not been categorized. They used to call it junk DNA. We were telling people, no, it's not. It is dark matter. It manifests itself based on your level of understanding where you become enlightened, illuminated. And so the people who are at the apex of the acquisition of knowledge are said to be enlightened. This is where the concept of Illuminati comes from. And so people, I understand that you've got people out here historically who have used the teachings for very nefarious reasons. What I'm saying is the times are dictating that in the year 2012 and beyond, much will be opened up to us based on your level of vibration or your enlightenment, because all information, which is light, travels in a spiral called vortexes. That's why in the cosmos you have these swirling vortexes called black holes. That's dark matter. As above, so below. Okay? Now, we just came into the realization, and this should blow everybody's mind, that the planets in our solar system don't revolve around the sun. The sun is shooting through the galaxy, and all of the planets are following the sun based on its magnetic pull in a spiral pattern. As above, so below. That is ancient Kemet knowledge that our people were very much aware of and based their entire system from which all other religious systems come from. Those are historical facts. When I talk about the five platonic solids, of which all substances known to man are in the shape of one of these platonic solids, what I am really saying is the most important one, the dodecahedron, is called the fifth element. Now, let me show you how quantum physics comes into this. The quantum physicians have just built, a couple of years ago, a giant machine called a superconductor super collider. They built that machine because they said they were looking for the God particle, the substance that basically binds matter together. Now, let me show you when I say African people are the most profound people in history, yet we the most ignorant. That, too, has its primary basis in African history because our people understood the five platonic solids to the point that only a select few were able to study the dodecahedron, the fifth element. We know it as the ether. The ether is comprised, and this is the science of quantum physics, everything that ever happened in our past, present, and future. That's the fifth element. That's what they're looking for. That's the area that they're going in the God particle. African people who were aware of these things centuries ago still have it within their DNA based on the science of the five platonic solids. And we can access this because whatever your ancestors were, you are. Sister and Brother Rob, I, for one, am proof positive, and my people will tell you. That's why I mentioned we have been able to predict circumstances before they happen based on the research or the acquisition of light at higher levels. What they're doing, because light is nothing more than frequency, it's measured in frequency. What they're doing is they're using ELF, extremely low frequency, to keep our people vibrating at a low level such that we don't have access to the higher domains of information through light. I hope I'm not being too technical. But this is so deep yet so real, very well documented, and I suggest that your listeners go out and get this book by a brother who's a PhD named Edward Bruce Bynum. And I don't normally promote other people's books because I do my own research. So where I read hundreds of books over the years, I don't read many more books today with the advent of the Internet. I do my own research. In every single form that I give, I have close to 100 pieces of documentation, if not more, where they basically can basically comprise a book. So each one of my forms is like a book into itself. But this book is called Dark Light Consciousness, Melanin, Serpent Power, and the Luminous Matrix of Reality by Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, PhD. And my people who are reading the book will tell you it's almost as if I wrote the book because my research jives with his 1,000%. It's the power of the blackness that brings forth the light. That's why these people always concentrate on us, always pick our leaders, because it's about controlling our ascension into another domain based on the time that we are in now that dictate all movement. That's why you see the things happening in the cosmos that you do. When you get a chance, Google a hexagram on Saturn, and what you will find is a six-point star sitting at the north pole of Saturn in the Eye of Horu, which we also break down to show you what that really represents, along with the Ankh. And all of these things are nothing more than byproducts of things that are inside us based on our say, our lineage, that we advocate to become a part of everybody but us. And this is why we say, when you really understand the history of black people, what you've got is white people imitating black people who are imitating white people.
Yeah. Hey,
you follow?
Hold on. Let me play this real quick.
Go ahead, bro.
Quick break.
Our crisis today, the crisis in Somalia, the crisis in Africa, the crisis in the Caribbean islands, the crisis in the United States, that we have lost from our historical memory the time when we were in charge of the state and when we ruled the state, that the methodology taken out of our mind and not the mind of a foreigner, a faker, and a fool. When independence came to Africa, when the concept of independence came to the Caribbean islands, when we had our charade called the Civil Rights Movement, nobody was fighting to be totally independent of that former slave master. In some way, we were all crawling to get back on the plantation. We were fighting to consume his hamburger. We were fighting for the right to make our oppressor rich. So we did not understand the nature of liberation. And if you do not understand the nature of liberation, mentally, you are still a slave. Now, the slavery that we still must grapple with started in the 15th and the 16th century. Slavery started in the world when man emerged in the world and developed a fear and a weakness of other people and felt that they had to enslave another people to feel safe. That was one kind of slavery, but slavery based solely on race, on color. That's the slavery hatched from the European mind in the 15th and the 16th century. For there were periods when Europeans enslaved Europeans, Jews enslaved Jews. Now, my focal point is that for most of your existence on this earth, you lived in independent states fashioned by your own mind. And that this great event has been removed from your historical memory. I want you to travel with me just a little while. Or we go behind that slavery curtain and see what did you do when you were in charge of the state all by yourself. You didn't ask any foreigner to assist you in any way, and you ruled the state exceptionally well. In some places, you ruled so exceptionally well, you had no word for jail in your language because no one had ever gone to one. You create words to describe what happened. If no one ever gone to something called a jail, you don't need a word for one. If you never threw away children, you needed no word for orphanage. If the life between a man and a woman worked and functioned because of the support system coming from both sides of the family, you never heard of a thing called divorce. Well, no one ever got one. You got mixed up with someone else's thing. Now, understand me. I have gone over again over cultural incubation. When you come out of a cultural womb, the chemistry of that womb shapes your personality. When someone puts you into another womb, it's like putting you into the stomach of someone who's not your mother. The chemistry of your personality is shaped another way. Therefore, you had no wife visas in Africa. You had no teenage pregnancy in Africa. So your worst traits were picked up from your oppressor because you were living in a state that you did not fashion. And because the state that you fashioned was removed from your historical memory, when finally you develop semi-independence, because you had forgotten how you ruled the state, you became the imitators of the people who put you in that second incubator, where the chemistry of your personality changed to suit the slave master's chemistry and not the original chemistry of your birth.
That's right.
All right, welcome back. Everybody's not in.
Brother, my December series in wrapping up the spirituality of African people is a tribute to Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and all their works. We call it BCE, the Ben and Clark era.
So, you have to keep me posted on all that.
Yes, sir. So, it's ironic, but it's not coincidental, because everything is happening for a reason. That's why I keep going back to time dictates all movement, because we are all interconnected. But African people are the foundation of the connectedness. And this is where I feel compelled to pick up from a spiritual perspective where Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark left off, so that people coming behind me can go back and look at the research that we've done and basically take it a step further. We should never, ever forget the work of people like Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, because they are my contemporaries, along with a few others.
Yes. Awesome stuff.
Yes, sir. I love them, brother. And you'll notice, brother, a lot of times we think our words are our own, but you can hear some of what I said in Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark. You can hear some of what I said in terms of the minority question in, what's brother's name? I keep forgetting his name.
Claude Anderson.
So there's a consistent vein that runs through the liberation struggle of African people. And you'll know who's in that strain and who's not, because you'll hear some of the same things from all of us. That is why I keep going back to the foundation of whatever we do economically, socially, politically, has to be a spiritual foundation, because it is the guiding force of everything that is on the planet, from their science to their politics to even the corporation comes right out of Kemet, with the board of directors being nothing more than the council of elders who dictate the movement in a society, and in this case, they dictate the movement of the corporate structure. It's all imitation.
Wow. Everybody lined up? Question or comment?
No.
I was at the African Festival this summer, sister, and I went there.
Huh?
I got in free because I couldn't afford it. I was at the African Festival here in Chicago.
You know,
and I was
hold on. You know, that's a you know what I had a problem with? I went over there and I was like, man, I'm gonna go in. I got there, I was like, wait, it was like $20?
Yeah.
For the park.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, man. Then like I remember the times I went inside, like stuff was overpriced. I was like, okay, cause you know, I'm a support. But that was the last straw. Then I gotta find a place to park, and then ain't safe to be parking over that shit. That shit ain't changed.
You and me both, brother, but I got lucky because I knew the brother who did the lighting. He basically wired the whole place, and he was able to get me in free, okay? So that's because I had connections with that brother going way back, okay? But anyway, I stopped at a booth at a brother who was selling a Phil Valentine DVD. And so we got into a discussion. And the next thing I know, I'm giving an hour and a half lecture out there. You know how narrow the little passageways are where the booths and stuff are, where you walk, you know, from booth to booth, right?
Yeah, yeah, you can see up a whole lot of stuff over there.
We shut that down, brother. The people who were walking past, the level of conversation was so illuminating that before I know it, I had a crowd of about 40-some-odd people around me.
Mm.
They bought every DVD that I had. Okay?
Mm.
Now, here's why. I'm including people who had booths. They can't stay booths to hear what I was saying. And I was humbled by it because I don't carry myself, you know, in any other manner, but the humbleness of who I am. But here's the deal. I had one of the brothers who was talking about the Phil Valentine tape. I said, you know, brother, I've been standing here and people have been buying my stuff and they haven't been buying yours. So here's what I'm going to do. I end up giving him a little bit of what I made. And I let the people know it's incumbent upon us to reach out and give back, even in this circumstance, to people who may not be as fortunate as we are. And I do this at every forum that I have in Inglewood with the children. When I take up a collection, if there are children outside of the library, I'm making my business to give them something. Because the
people
gave me something. Yes, sir.
I'm glad you brought that part up about the give back. And I got a real issue with that because I know some people are saying, look, so-and-so, just like this Barack Obama thing. I've been saying it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people owe. No, you're supposed to get back. But a lot of people seem to think that, hey, look, I made it on my own. And you just go ahead and you point out that you were selling your DVDs pretty basically in the hood. Even when these people that's in the music industry, that's how them started. They were selling their DVD stuff to the people next door.
That's right.
So they don't seem to think that, you know, you need to come back and kind of support these people. This is where you got your start at. Nobody really know about you. You didn't go straight to where you at without going ahead and going through the roots. They seem to forget when.
You're absolutely right, bro.
I mean, that irritates the shit out of me a lot.
I'm with you, bro. That's why I say, you know, that's why I do. I try to practice the things that I preach, man. I ain't about money. I could care less about money because ain't no black people's faces on it. So to me, it's automatically suspect. But I understand that it's a tool. It is a tool that can be used to get our people where we need to go because, let's face it, all our people subscribe to cash. You know, cash rules everything around you. Cream get the money. Dollar bill, y'all. So I see it as a form of energy. Okay? And I use that energy to entice my people to listen. And I must admit, and that this was proof positive, everybody from 17 to 70 who was crowding around me bought them DVDs. I'm still talking to many of them people to this day. Because luckily I had cards on me where I was able to give out people my cards. So our people are ready for something different. We just got to get out there and give it to them because they got nowhere to turn. They don't know where to turn.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a living witness, man.
Okay.
You know, the Christians say this guy Jesus turned water to wine. Well, I ain't one of them Jesus believers, okay? But I do know this. The spiritual essence of African people has the capacity to change everything that is, was, and will be. Of that, I'm clear on. And if anybody get this book by this brother, Dr. Edward Bynum, who is a practitioner of the ancient system, and is talking about the results in terms of psychiatry, because that's his field. He has a PhD in psychiatry. And he's pointing out in the book that the origin of even psychiatry is Kemet. And that
the people who practice psychiatry today, everybody from, you name them, brother, when you go into their offices, it's no accident that you see all this, these African artifacts in their offices.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so it's like we know.
That is disturbing, man. That made me sit back there. That is disturbing.
Yes, sir. So, but we ain't worrying about it because it's the times, brother. You and me, Rob, are where we are today because the time deemed it appropriate. Brother Fuquan, I've known that brother for more than 20 years, okay? He used to,
yeah.
Tell, he used to come back to my phone years ago, okay?
Well, look, man, when I sitting there, when I'm talking to you guys, man, I was, hey, you got me on, I'm on board.
Well, we're going to do it, brother, because we need and we are doing things for the right. And I ain't into ego tripping. My name ain't got to be on nothing. I can be in the background just as easily as the foreground with no problem. And the other thing that I think that we definitely have to work on, because our people have been steeped in this, and I mentioned it earlier, in terms of moving our people forward economically, is to get over the fear. Fear is a definite vibratory level, just as love is. We studied the original music scale, where the middle of that scale has a frequency of 528. That scale is called the Solfeggio scale, Solfeggio. Check it out. The scale was manipulated in the 16th century by Pope Johann, okay, where back in the day people used to have music that was accompanying their particular spiritual or religious belief system. There was a music that went with it. Pope Johann changed the music scale because people could go inside of themselves based on the vibrations that came from the music. Let me show you how deep this is. The middle scale, the 528 frequency in Solfeggio is called mi. Mi. You know, like do, re, mi, like that?
Right.
Check this. Right. The word feminine, this is why the woman is so important. The word feminine is composed of fi, mi, nine. Fi meaning iron. Mi meaning love. And nine being the number of transformation.
What?
It's the last number before everything repeats itself. That is the metaphysical makeup of the woman. That's why she gives birth in 9 months. And if you look at the makeup of DNA, two of the four substances that are made up of DNA end in nine. And I can go a lot deeper, brother, but that ain't what we're here to talk about tonight. But I'm just going to show you that when our people made the statement, as above, so below, they were talking about there's nothing going on in the cosmos that ain't going on inside of us. That's why I mentioned about the black hole being nothing more than a spiral of light, and that our DNA, or the 97% of DNA that hasn't been categorized, is the exact same process. And it basically responds to new ideas and new information. That 97% will automatically come together with other molecules within your body to construct other informational avenues in your brain, because your brain, go and check it out, exists in a state of chaos. And when you bring information in, that's called order. Now, I know you've heard the term order out of chaos.
Right.
That's the European construct, and it's backwards. It's really chaos brings about order. Because when you're born into this world, you know absolutely nothing. Your whole world is nothing more than chaos. And through the process of learning, you become orderly. You become enlightened. So black people, get off this Jay-Z Illuminati nonsense. And become Illuminati yourself, because that's your birthright.
opening.
And brother, go ahead. Brother, we've been talking for I don't know how long, but I'll have you on this phone at 12 o'clock. And I still got 35 pages to read before I close my eyes. So we can pick this up, and we can take parts of what we talked about tonight, and I'll come back on your show after I get back from Detroit, and we can break this stuff down further so that people can go and get the documentation and can understand it firsthand.
So when you want to come back, brother?
Oh, man, I'll see you Sunday. We'll talk about it then, okay?
Okay, okay. Tell them who you are.
Where I am?
Now tell them who you are.
Oh, I'm not sure. Did you have your chat room open?
Yes, well, yeah, it is open, but, you know.
Okay, well, I hope some of my... Okay, well, I sent out quite a few emails to people that are familiar with me from around the world, okay? Thanks to the internet. So I'm sure you had quite a few people listening tonight if they got the message in time to, but I'll send out prior notices in advance, or we can send out prior notices in advance, and we can break all this stuff down, man, because when people hear this stuff, brother, it's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-blowing, brother. And that spiral that I talked about,
yeah,
that's the origin of the Ankh. That's the male and female principle. We know that that's what the Ankh represents, okay? But it's much deeper than that, based on my study, again, in African spirituality, where we went back at the beginning to study the origin of alphabet and numbers. And when we lay this stuff out, brother, it will absolutely blow your mind. It pokes a hole in organized religion. Because, again, all of them are pieces or derivatives, if you will, of African history.
Right, right. Okay, brother.
And
we're going to talk about it. Go ahead and schedule a good time for you to come back.
Yes, sir. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, my name is Robert X. That X is because I don't worship Malcolm. Because if he was here today talking about going to the UN, I would say, brother, you don't want to go to the UN for anything. It's totally controlled by the Zionists. That's why they bombed Gaddafi. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the UN is not a construct that you want to put any faith in because it's totally controlled by the Jews. But I wear that X because here's a brother who, whether you agree with him or not, he chose the truth knowing that death would come with it over all else, and it cost him. And I respect that brother to the highest. The one other brother that I have a lot of respect for, and I must mention his name because I know what happened to him here in Chicago, is Brother Steve Coakley, who in 1981, I went to hear this brother speak, and I thought he was crazy. He was the only black man that I ever seen, even to this day, break down the corporate structure and who controlled what in terms of power and how it all worked. And he was talking about Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations, and I know it seems mundane today, but back in 1980, 81, nobody in the black community was talking about this stuff. And so he's the reason. He just made his transition earlier this year. But he's the reason that I began to reassess the things that I was taught, dropped out of college, and got out here and made the decision that I'm going to work for black people until the day that I die, and ain't nobody got to pay me nothing to do it because that ain't my value system. And I've been basically in tune with that ever since, brother.
We're glad
you're
out here, brother.
That's what I am.
We're glad you're out here, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, brother. I'm going to close it out.
Appreciate you, sister. And you too, Brother Rob, and everybody that was listening. Hotel.
Thanks, brother. I'm going to close it out with some more Dr. Clark. Hope y'all like this.
African problem. Either Africans find a solution to African problem or there is no solution. And if you don't find a solution soon, you go back into slavery.
Early, They gave me another assignment. They didn't pick me up to go to the assignment. I followed their instructions and waited at the hotel. I would love to be here when I can be more fully in depth on this subject, because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusion about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it. I'm saying that all organized present religions are male chauvinist murder cults. And I say there is no exception. Well, I wanted to be here early. I wanted to deal with our relationship with the people of the world and the fact that we created peaceful nations that had no word for jail because no one had ever gone to one. No word for old people's home because no one ever threw away grandma and grandpa. No word for orphanage. We did all of this. And over half of human civilization was over before we knew that a European was in the world. Before he wore a shoe or lived in a house that had a window. Now, Africa has always and still is the prize for the whole world. We as a people have always been the world's richest people, culturally rich, mineral rich. We have always been the prize because we have always had and still have something that other people won't, think they can't do without, and don't care to pay for. Because we have always been the prize, we have been under siege for over 3,000 years. Nothing that ever brought into Africa from the outside was meant to do the Africans any good. That means all other religions. Islam was the handmaiden of Arab imperialism. Christianity was the handmaiden of European